Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. It's been already some time since sporadic news coming out from Turkmenistan about difficult economic conditions. That includes layoffs, delayed salaries, shortage of food items, etc. But the latest sign of economic downfall is the cancellation of free utility services. This comes at a time after losing Iran as a customer. Today, Turkmenistan relies only on Chinese import of Turkmen gas and no second option in the horizon. In other words, Turkmen economy wasn't promising for some time. With decline in energy price few years back, it got worse, and recent indications are it is hitting the wall. The question is, what impact the difficult economic environment is having on ordinary people, and what authorities are doing about it? To discuss the subject, I'm joined by Max Leberson, CIS analyst at the Economic Intelligence Unit, Dr. Luka Ancici, chairman of Glasgow University's Central Asia Studies, Faruk Yusufov, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Turkmen Service, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owozi, is joining us. Gentlemen, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Hi.
Very nice to have you. Okay, let's start with you, Faruk. Just how bad is the economy today?
The economy is very bad. I was thinking how to call it, but I would call it a great Turkmen depression, because everyone is depressed at the moment. People are not getting paid for months. On the bazaars, the sellers, you not only you see fewer buyers, but today we are reporting about empty booths with no sellers on the bazaars. And there are reports that in a closed meeting, President Berdimuhamedov instructed the regional authorities to find and fund their budgets on their own, find their own money and pay the state organizations their salaries and to fund the regional budgets. And so the situation is very grim, and by day, it seems like it's going to get worse and worse.
Max, Faruk describes the situation as the Turkmen depression. I don't know if you share his assessment. Feel free to add your voice. But my question is, Max, what are the specific areas within the economy we see this decline happening?
Well, so the main difficulty, obviously, with Turkmen and economic data is that there isn't much of it, and a lot of it is unreliable, especially just starting with the GDP growth figures coming out of Turkmenistan. Even the ones that are reproduced from the IMF, about 6% growth consistently, are just not credible. Our own estimate is that growth has slowed down in 2014. It's not what was reported at 9% to about 2 or 1% last year and this year. And the hard data that we do have confirms this completely, and that is the export revenue figures, which show that Turkmen export revenue from its exports to China has collapsed completely, along with the collapse in global energy prices in the last 2 years. And so that fell from $9 billion they were getting from China in 2014 to $5 billion last year, so almost half. And it's still falling in the first few months of this year, according to IMF data. And then that is confirmed then in turn by all of the reports that we have from Turkmenistan, from the RFE service, of wage arrears and people getting laid off and extremely high inflation. The only question now is how they will be able to maintain the currency at its current peg to the dollar. They devalued it back in January 2015 by about one-fifth, from 2.85 to the dollar to 3.5 manats to the dollar. But now, I mean, they are due a depreciation. Our hunch is that they'll wait until after the Asian indoor games in September to do that. But it's hard to see how they could avoid that. And the consequences of that on ordinary people would be incredibly high inflation and even more economic hardship.
Faruk, just briefly, how the currency is doing these days?
The currency, the official rate, as Max pointed out, it's 3.5, but it's impossible to get official rate anywhere. But the market rate these days is a little bit over 7 monads per dollar. So it's more than twice more expensive than the official rate.
Mm, okay. Dr. Luca, Bruce, jump in, please. So we were talking about, before this currency thing came up, the specific areas, sectors where we see these difficulties emerging. Your thoughts, please.
Go ahead, Luca.
Oh, thank you. Well, first of all, this is clearly ultimate, if you want, failure of 25 years of economic development. I mean, I think we can confidently say now that whatever policy has been implemented, especially in terms of energy, from the years of gone on to Bedi Mohamedov, has now failed. So I think that if we agree on this, then it's easy to see how extreme dependency on one resource, which is either gas or cotton, so on two single resource sectors, is actually now becoming unsustainable. So I think that the area in which that is suffering the most is the planning at the moment. Beyond the activity in the real economy, is the planning that does not know what to do. Because how do you get out of this without completely unraveling all the economic political system that they had last 25 years? It seemed pretty unrealistic to me. But I think that if we look at the tradition in which Turkmenistan has done its economy planning, we know that the army and the energy sector are the last two to have been hit by any kind of cuts there are. So I think that anything else which is coming before these two sectors, strategically important, is going to be cut drastically. And subsidies are particularly telling, if you want, facets of this process, because subsidies have guaranteed some kind of support across an increasingly authoritarian domestic landscape. Right. So when you eliminate, when you obliterate the subsidies and its food, its electricity, its heat, its sort of gas for the car, you then realize the population now has got pretty much nothing to cling on to. Hmm. And if people in the Velayat are told that they have to look for alternative sources of money, well, that to me creates a very interesting question. Hmm. If you're looking for alternative economic sources, why don't you also look for alternative power of politics sources? That's interesting. It brings to disintegration, if you want.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, your thought on this?
Well, we know, I mean, the recent figures that just came out showed that even gas production in Turkmenistan has gone down for the first time in 7 years. And that is the backbone of their economy and always has been. Clearly, what we see here is an absolute lack of preparation for a day when gas exports might not be as generous as they have been in the past. And unfortunately, now the Turkmen government has shifted the responsibility for the economy onto the shoulders of its people. I know there's been some generous estimates that the average Turkmen wage for the year is about $4,000. But even at that, the Turkmen people are being saddled with all kinds of extra expenses all of a sudden that never existed before. It's not just taking away the subsidies. It's removing money from the monthly salaries or simply not paying salaries at all. I can easily foresee that with this Asian Indoor Games coming up that they won't be able to sell all the tickets. And they're not incredibly expensive tickets. They seem to be $1 or $2 a piece, at least according to the website. But if they can't fill those stadiums, then I'm sure they're going to turn to the Turkmen people again and demand. And, you know, factory owners, heads of state farms are going to shift this over to the people and say, you know, you're obligated to go and buy X number of tickets and stuff to do that. So now everything, the whole weight of the collapsing economy is falling upon the Turkmen people who've had a tacit agreement with the government for many, many years that, you know, they could fool around with what they wanted to do. The president of the country lives this extravagant life, the new Han, whatever. But at least the basics would be supplied to the people. But that whole social contract has just been broken. And so anywhere you look, if you had a list of what's going right in Turkmenistan and what's going wrong in Turkmenistan, there would be nothing on the list of what's right. And the list of what's going wrong would be several pages at least.
Everything boils down to the reason why we are here. This is the result of depending on one source, one sector. Earlier, Dr. Luca, you mentioned this. So just to take a second thought on this, maybe Max, you can jump in if you like. So is there any other reason other than extreme dependence on one source, as Dr. Luca said, which is contributing to this situation?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think that is by far and away the primary reason. But even if even if that were the only source driving the economy, there are other oil-producing, gas-producing economies that are still much better run.
Right.
Thinking of countries like Qatar, for example, that still do a better job in managing downturns. And for example, using the windfalls and revenue from that gas production, and using it more effectively, and having a more open economy that allows, for example, for cooperation with foreign investors and onshore gas exploration and production, which the government has opposed, and just being more open internationally and having a more open economy that would allow for some diversification into manufactured goods or some other way to get foreign currency revenue. But its attitude of having completely opaque data that makes it very difficult for international investors or organizations to cooperate with them unnecessarily exacerbates the problem.
Mm-hmm. Farouk, authorities usually in Turkmenistan do not acknowledge setbacks like this, but do you see in any way, in shape or form, that they are reflecting this situation in their deeds and words these days?
Yeah, every week in the last maybe two or three months, every week the president conducts his weekly meetings, and these days he has two meetings a week, and he expresses his unsatisfaction with the things. Like, he criticizes government officials for failing in the agricultural reforms. He fires and reprimands his officials for corruption, and I mean, of course, the official media goes boasting about the successes of building a happy nation, but what president says during those meetings contradicts to those statements, to those boasting. But openly, they of course do not acknowledge that there is difficulty, but president every week in every meeting he raises those issues, and it seems that he seems very frustrated with the state of the affairs.
Usually Turkmen authorities, especially the president, keeps firing and hiring new people. But is there anything new in this saga these days?
There is nothing new. I mean, the pattern stays the same. He fires and hires new fires old ministers, hires new ministers. But what can these ministers do? They are not magicians. They cannot change things. I mean, to give you an example of what Bruce was predicting for the Asian Games. 2 days ago, there was a qualifying match for Asian Championship, a soccer match in Dachau's, and no one went there, and people were forced to visit the game and pay for the tickets. I mean, and no one will doubt that the same thing will happen during these Asian Games, although the government officials made a statement that they are expecting about 150,000 people, foreign visitors, visiting the Asian Games. But I doubt that there will be a lot of people willing to visit Ashgabat, because the authorities already announced that each visitor will have to be under supervision of special guides. So I don't think that there will be a lot of enthusiasm for visiting the Asian Games under such circumstances.
Thank you, Farouk. So this is the situation. So what impact this difficult economic environment is having on ordinary people? What this impact mean in short and long term? And what can the authorities do to avoid this negative trend? We will continue the conversation discussing these and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Meclis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are revisiting states of Turkmenistan's economy and its implication on ordinary people. Joining me in the discussion are Max Lambertson, CIS analyst at the Economic Intelligence Unit, Dr. Lukan Çiftçi, chairman of Glasgow University Central Asian Studies, Faruk Yusupov, director of the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Turkmen Service, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen. Faruk, just to continue with you, with the reporters on the ground, perhaps your team is in the best position to respond to this question. So as we were talking in the first half of the show, that economy is pretty bad. So what are the signs that it is having real impact on day-to-day life of ordinary people?
If we talk about like average person in Turkmenistan today, like let's take a doctor or a teacher, We were reporting recently about because they are not getting their salaries on time, and now it's like vacation time and they left their work for vacation without pay. They were buying food from the private stores on credit, like the private stores have their logs and they will write your name that you bought this and that on that day and you owe this much. This is happening.
What kind of products are they, Faruk?
I mean, these are basic staples like sugar or flour and oil, what Turkmens usually usually have on everyday basis. And as I already told, there are fewer and fewer buyers on the markets. And because of that, fewer and fewer sellers. And another sign is that those private stores are closing. The people usually rent those buildings for private stores, they are returning the buildings, as our sources say. Fewer people are visiting doctors these days, because to visit doctor you need money to pay bribes or to buy medicine. So everything is very grim. I have not seen this situation myself personally, but from what people are reporting to us, the situation is very, very grim.
Dr. Luka, the economy was bad already for some time, but despite this severe situation, people in the country are holding up so far. But how bad is too bad for them?
Well, this is the big question, isn't it? Like, we've been discussing this for months now. When does the buck stop for Turkmen people? It seemed to me that we slowly approaching the end, in the sense that if we assume, and this is likely to say so, that the gas revenue inflow is the only inflow of capital that comes to the country because there is not much investment, the country is closed out. So if that's the only cash that comes here, and after the regime has taken its large sort of part to siphon off corruption, things like that, then whatever peculates down now is no longer there. So we got to the point at which people, as Faruk just said, are not able to go to the doctor because they can't bribe their access. So it can't be that long, can it? We heard that first of wage arrears, then there were food riots, then there were strikes. Now we hear that the basic economic rules are collapsing one after the other. It seemed to me that unless something is done quickly, things will just collapse. It wouldn't even take that much. I think even if you just start to allow access of foreign companies to onshore gas development, which is what Max mentioned before, that should be enough to guarantee enough money to start sort of picking up the economy once again. But the regime is not even willing to do that. So to my mind, rather than the failure of whatever one resource economy, so it seems to me that it's not even the fact that this is a one resource economy, but it is extremely restrictive management of the gas industry that has been the main factor responsible for that. So just changing the sort of inflexible access to the country could be a way to turn things around. If this doesn't happen, so I mean, if business is usual, I can't see this regime holding on for a few more months.
Bruce, just to follow up Dr. Luka's point, you had a story. The title reads like Turkmenistan wants to invest on useful projects. Was it that, like that? So, so is it something that they are trying to act differently than in the past to probably to respond to the situation? What's your reading?
Well, yes, I did write that article about Turkmenistan and investing in useful projects because it did strike me that they were going to do that water purification plant out in the Balkan, Western Balkan province. You know, there's two things about that. Although I was glad to see that there was articles in state media about something like this being built rather than another statue to the Ark of Dog or a new white marble park or something like that no one would ever go to. You know, this seemed to be functional. One, right about the same time that they announced that, of course, then we got the news that they cut the subsidies. So there wouldn't be any more free gas, water, electricity, things like that. So now I have to wonder if they've just reallotted money. Now, the money that they're going to take from the people now for all these basic utilities and services just shifts over into these water purification plants. So they found a new way to pay for it. That said, also, of course, the areas where they're going to build the water purification plants are oil and gas projects are going on there, too. So they do need these water purification plants because they need to have workers out there so that they can, you know, pump out oil and gas and stuff. So it's not totally politics of like, let's be good guys and give something to the people. I mean, there actually is an economic reason underlying all this. You know, again, I was happy to see it's happening, but now I wonder who's actually going to be paying for this. Is it coming out of the state budget is it going to be put on the backs of the people? You know, and two, there's an obvious reason why it's there. Because there is industry out there, and they do need to pump up the availability of fresh, drinkable, potable water to people out there.
Do you think this is a kind of a strategy change? Does it have anything to do with the current crisis?
Well, I mean, you could certainly see where this would be something they would want to promote and publicize to the public that, yes, we are trying to do something for you. And here's an example of that. And of course, anyone that's been to Turkmenistan or even read much about it will know that, you know, anything you can do to get fresh water into the country is going to be welcomed by, you know, the entire population. So that does look good. But I mean, it's far short of where they need to go with this. You know, we've mentioned the indoor Asian games that they're going to have this year. I mean, you know, that's $5 billion they're spending on that, and they spent more than $2 billion on the new airport for these supposedly 150,000 people that Farouk mentioned they seem to think are going to show up. What could they do with $7 billion right now to help out the people in the country in this situation? I mean, you know, the list goes on and on of things, projects that would help the people, employment opportunities, things like that. But now they've just wasted it. You know, so I think even the people, if they see a project like this water purification plant on the balance sheet, it's not very much because they've seen that a lot of the money just goes to, you know, vanity projects, billions and billions of dollars. And if they had that money right now, it would be a totally different situation in Turkmenistan. But they don't. And all they have is a bunch of fancy buildings and statues, you know, that are useless to the population.
Max, this brings me to another question. Actually, that's a fundamental question. Whether Turkmen authorities understand what are they faced with. I mean, other than these steps that Bruce mentioned, in recent months, a number of high-level officials were also fired. Obviously, it's not something new, but what new is some of them were in direct connection to corruption cases, and also an anti-corruption body was set up. You might recall that some time ago, Tajikistan too established a similar body, but by now the body itself became the most corrupt agency in Tajikistan, and it's under investigation these days. And also, to be fair, most of these problems, as we discussed so far, are the authorities' own creation. I guess my question is, does the Turkmen authorities really understand the nature, the size, and the scope of the problem?
I mean, I have to say yes and no. It's, I mean, a lot of the authorities' policies until now have defied logic and sort of the issues that we were describing before. Some simple moves that they could do, they haven't made to at least alleviate some of the pressure on the population. But at the same time, I think the authorities are completely aware of the lack of foreign currency, of hard currency that they have to enact any further development policies they might want to do. The data that we do have access to of Turkmen assets abroad in banks, we see that there's $26 billion sitting out, probably mostly in Germany. And that money has fallen a bit in the last few years, which suggests perhaps, this is a little bit of speculation, but that they've been using some of this money to prop up the economy. It was at the end of 2014, they had $27 billion, and it's fallen to $25 billion by $2 billion over the last 2 years, which suggests that perhaps they're dipping into that to prop up the economy somewhat, or at least pay for some of the construction leading up to the games. So at the same time, if I had to venture a guess, I would assume that the authorities are trying to ride out the next few months until the games are held in September. And then once that international attention is gone, perhaps then try for a devaluation of the currency and maybe inject some of the more of those funds held abroad into the economy to try to manage some sort of a transition back to a more functioning economy. But then again, a lot of their moves until now, I would have not expected. So it's very hard to read what the authorities are thinking. But it seems that their primary concern is doing anything they can to keep a hard currency in Turkmenistan. And that has been evidenced by the dispute they picked with Iran at the beginning of the year, which was just they were willing to forego gas for goods to try to get some hard currency from Iran. The shift to card payments to try to have the whole population move to that so that there'd be no more cash leaving hands. Mm. And then the new customs restrictions they put in place in June, they all point to the government focusing almost all of its energies on this issue. So,
interesting. Unfortunately, we have to conclude the discussion. As a final note, let's start with you, Dr. Luca, if you wish. Even if the authorities genuinely want to take the country out of this crisis, what they can do? What are their options?
Well, they have to change energy policy. This is a single resource economy. Gas is more than half of GDP revenues, and as an employing sector, they should just make sure that there is more money coming in. How to do that? Open up to international oil companies, gun companies, to explore and develop the onshore fields. That, to me, is very simple. On the other hand, they can also start abandoning this big policy of having this gigantic project like TAPI, 30, 40 BCM, and focus on one or two pipeline exports in which, you know, they can just have 7 or 8 BCM that they sell every year and that to bring cash in. I mean, there is no silver lining what's happening now, but at least we know they are not depleting their reserves as much as they could, which means that the gas is still there. But the way in which they articulate this policy actually implies that no one can buy this gas beyond China at the moment. So without being, you know, very idealistic, which I like to be, you know, which would be opening up human rights, that kind of stuff, I think that they can manage pretty much the same resources in a little bit more open way and sort of reap some benefits. But one thing is for sure, and I think that, you know, that's probably my biggest takeaway from today's talk, is that things cannot go on as they are. Business as usual means that they are going to be in trouble. Mm-hmm. And by they, I mean the elite.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take a few more thoughts on this. Farouk, options for Turkmen authorities to come out from this crisis, what are they?
First, for the starters, maybe they should, Luca mentioned, they should abandon like silly and wasteful projects like building artificial island, man-made island on the Caspian Sea, abandon this TAPI, which everyone agrees that is a waste of time and money because it's not going to be sustainable. Reform the if the country is going to be dependent on the energy in the near and midterm, and after they reform it, and then they can think about like diversifying the economy. But if they want to come out of this difficult situation, there should be consistent energy policy and focused energy policy, and then they maybe. Another thing would be to somehow pacify and tame their appetites and steal less money from the economy. There is still very high corruption in the politics. They steal like mad people, and that would be the only way of coming out of the situation, I think, at the moment.
Bruce, Max, please feel free to jump in.
Go ahead, Max.
Yeah, I think I agree completely with that, Luca and Farouche said. I think in practical terms, only other couple options would be perhaps to restart gas exports to Russia, which is possible. I think Brady Mohammed have met with Putin recently because there's no way they're going to ramp up exports to China and there are no other possible destinations for them. And the other one would be to introduce some degree of transparency in public finances. That is extremely idealistic, I know. But that could then perhaps lead to, to make investors more comfortable and also help the country prove how it spends its money and how it collects its revenue from the population.
Okay, Bruce.
You know, I mean, onshore contract, obviously, that's the one that is key to them being able to survive, as far as I can see. The problem that they're going to have with that, and this gets to Max's point on financial transparency and stuff, is that, who are you going to get for onshore contracts at the moment? China's already been in. They're not coming in any more than they are. Russia, even if they were willing to come in, the Turkmen government doesn't want a big Russian presence onshore right there, which means that sooner or later you're going to end up with either Middle Eastern partners or Western partners, and either one of them are going to want a strong presence on the ground there, or they're going to want, open ledger so that they can track where the money is. And that requires a totally new way of doing business for the Turkmen government. So it would necessitate drastic reform within the elites, where they would be willing to deal far more truthfully and honestly with foreign partners. And they really got to drop this isolationism thing. They need all the friends they can get and anyone that can help them export what they got to export. They need them right now. So this idea of Fortress Turkmenistan has to go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much for your insight. Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, called Kishlok Owozi. And also, big thanks goes to Max Lambertson, CIS analyst at the Economic Intelligence Unit, Dr. Luka Ancisti, chairman of Glasgow University's Central Asia Studies, and Farouk Yusupov, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Turkmen Service, for your time in TATS today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.